across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don Rue. Good morning. Hey there, Wisconsin. Welcome to the state of Wiscommon Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful but hazy day up north on this Wednesday, June 28th. It is 68 degrees up here on the lake. For folks listening in the Chippewa Valley on 93.5 The Tap, let's look at some other temperatures around Wisconsin at 6 o'clock in the morning on this Wednesday. Folks listening on the Shaw and Waukesha, they are at one of the cool parts of the state right now, 52 degrees. Madison, 63. Wisconsin Rapids, 57. Folks listening on the Buzz of the North in Hayward, it's 63 degrees there, and 67 for folks in Amory listening on Lake Air. Here's what's on tap this morning. The smoke-filled skies, the dry fields, the massive heat domes, the strong storms, they all indicate the need to stop making conditions worse for a climate that's already stressed. Fortunately, some new programs are helping cities like Green Bay, as well as farmers across Wisconsin who want to make changes away from fossil fuels. And we will talk to Melissa Baldoff for our weekly climate check. We'll be joined by Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Then in our second hour, we'll talk to Doug Mell, from serving as editor of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram to spending 15 years serving UW-Stout. Doug Mell knows a thing or two about when is it politics and when are you in full spin mode. And he says Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has it backwards when Voss claims the UW system is trying to force diversity, equity, and inclusion programs onto students. And so we'll discuss the harm of passing a state budget that actually cuts the university system at a time of pluses just because of a petty and some would argue race-based divisions. Doug Mell is my guest. It's 7 o'clock. He has an op-ed in the Cap Times talking all about this as well. Later this hour, we will visit with Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids, and then we'll wrap up the show with Todd Alba from that conveniently named show with his name on it, all ahead here on Up North News Radio, where our studio line is 844-967-2789. And where we got off on a nice little tangent yesterday, starting with Captain Kangaroo and then getting into other local kid shows from when we were growing up. So just a reminder that there aren't a lot of guardrails on the show. If we want to get into some other subject matter, you can be the one to help change that subject by calling 844-967-2789 or sending us a note, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron Zommers is in Madison as well. And I know, man, the photos and the video from the Milwaukee area, especially yesterday, were just, I mean, it was science fiction-y to see just how smoky it was. How are things looking out there in the Madison area?
Well, the air quality index today, according to my friend Noah, is 215 this morning.
215.
And yesterday,
that's not good. That's not good, by the way, folks.
Yesterday, my friend Avery, who lives downtown Milwaukee, said it was 232 there at about 5 p.m.
I mean, for at times yesterday, it qualified as the worst air quality in the world. In the world, that's how bad this smoke from the Canadian wildfires has been. We actually have kept the house buttoned up here today up north. It's not nearly as bad as down there, but still, I mean, it just smells and tastes just really not healthy out there.
Yep, it's like driving in mist, except it's just not quite right.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, now here's the thing. The fires, people go, no, I mean, we've had fires in Canada before, right? Well, through social media, I got turned on to the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center. All across Canada, if you look at this map, it's just flames coast to coast across Canada. There are 490 fires burning right now. 255 of them are still burning out of control, creating smoke and the atmospheric conditions that are just right to pump it down here. There was a story about how Flight for Life was unable to respond to a traffic crash in the Milwaukee area because the FAA requires 2 miles visibility for Flight for Life, and visibility was down to 3/4 of a mile. because of the smoke yesterday. There were air alerts in Minnesota for a record 23rd time. Michigan had one out for the entire state. And, you know, right now we're rather helpless to do anything about it until it drifts away and take care of ourselves and stay indoors and things like that. And we will talk more about this at 6:30 with Melissa Baldoff and Seth Hoffmeister as well. So many small headlines that we are going to talk about in the news today, but Aaron, I'd argue none are as important as this. Wheel of Fortune is not going to go away. It will have a new host. I'm sure you're excited about that.
I have a deeply... I'm not even going to try and fake it. I've watched probably 3 episodes of Wheel of Fortune ever.
Well, of course, you're far too young for something like that. But it's going to be around because when you're old, it's going to be there and you're going to find yourself watching it more and more. Hasn't happened to me yet. And I got a birthday Monday, but, you know, so it might happen next year. But thankfully, you know, with Pat Sajak exiting the stage next year, Ryan Seacrest has a new gig, which I have to say that actually sounds really natural. That sounds like the kind of thing Ryan Seacrest would move into in his later years.
Well, I'm going to have to tell our colleague Todd Michaels, you said that he hates Ryan Seacrest so much.
To me, it's like, look, somebody's got to play that particular role in life. And that's what Ryan Seacrest does. So, I mean, he's led a very charmed life in some ways. So good for him. It'll be Ryan Seacrest hosting Wheel of Fortune. Many more headlines to talk about in this segment before we do our climate check at the bottom of the hour. Brewers update too. So stick around. You're up north.
When I'm taking a greyhound on the Hudson River line, I'm in a New York state of mind.
I just figured since the Brewers were in New York playing the Mets for most of this week, a New York state of mind would work for here, and you're going to hear Empire State of Mind in our next hour as we talk about the Brewers, who have now split the first 2 games with the Mets. They lost to the Mets 7-2 last night. Though you have to admit, the Mets were a little bit more motivated. Their team owner abruptly announced that he's giving a State of the Club address today because the Mets have had a rotten year, winning last night for only the 3rd time in their last 10 games. And going back a couple of weeks, they are 6-16. And so there was a little bit of motivation to make some kind of an impression because the trade deadline isn't that far away for a team with an extremely high payroll and is underperforming. Milwaukee's starting pitcher Julio Teheran retired the first 9 batters on just 34 pitches, but then Brandon Nimmo opened the 4th with a long bomber, the first of 4 homers by the Mets, 2 of them by Nimmo. The gates were open. Teheran gave up 7 runs total in 5 2/3 innings. That 7 runs is as many as he'd allowed in his first 6 starts with the Brewers, spanning 35 innings since he joined the club a month ago. The Brewers' bats, they simply went quiet again. The only thing that prevented a shutout was Brian Anderson's 2-run single in the 8th. So 2 games down, 2 more to go against the Mets, 6 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night before heading to Pittsburgh for the weekend. Catch the Brewers on News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. Or if you're in the Fox Valley over the weekend, catch the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM. We've been talking a few times about the newly retooled Civic Media app. And, you know, Aaron and I can vouch for it. We've downloaded it. We're using it. Works out great. As we noted yesterday, you can text the show and we'll see the text messages. You can call the show directly from the app. We haven't talked much about TuneIn though, have we? Because again, we've got our own app now, right?
Yeah, especially now that the app is updated, it is legitimately very nice. Like before, the app was serviceable. Mm-hmm. And I used it a lot, but now I use it more because it works way faster. It just has more features like the texting and calling, setting your home station so that it automatically pulls up to that. Just little things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it you can set, you know, in my case, I set it at 93.5, the tap for a home station. I was listening to yesterday's Todd Alba show, which plays right before we come on. So I say all that to say, you know, nothing against TuneIn. If you are different people like different apps. Some people have TuneIn. Some people like to listen to things through SoundCloud or SiriusXM or whatever the case may be. And I checked early this morning. I'm like, yep, TuneIn. All the Civic Media stations are there. So if you are a TuneIn subscriber, especially if you are a premium subscriber, if you're not, and I'm not, there's a lot of ads. I mean, it's like YouTube. I am so glad the radio station pays for a premium account on YouTube for you. I can't imagine you finding all of our music clips if you had to sit through commercials every time.
Oh, man. If we didn't have like Spotify or something, but even then, using YouTube is better because we can get weird TV show clips or whatever.
What we need is for everybody who wants to advertise to just do it here. Just do it on your local Civic Media station. If we had commercials just right here, we'd be doing great, and you know, you wouldn't be bugged in other places quite so much. We want you to listen to the ads here. We just want to protect you, you know, everywhere else. And don't forget, the Civic Media website is where you can see all the various show schedules for each of the stations, find out just how much Civic Media is growing all around Wisconsin. Also, from an Up North News standpoint, we have received so many responses, Aaron, to another one of those one-word posts, fill-in-the-blank posts. There's one that we put up the other day, and we're up to, what, some 200 comments now. And it simply says, my favorite outdoor music venue in Wisconsin is blank. What comes off the top of your head first? My favorite outdoor music venue in Wisconsin is...
I mean, I don't know a lot of them really, besides random spots in Manitowoc or, yeah, that's pretty much it. Summerfest, I guess, is outside.
Sure. Summerfest gets a lot of responses. So this post really sticks out for two reasons over at the Up North News Facebook page. One is the sheer number of outdoor music venues that people thought to cite. The first few were about Big Top Chautauqua up in the Ashland Bayfield area. Then there was local things like Tuesday Night Blues in Eau Claire's Owen Park. There's the Wing Haven Pizza Farm. There's Alpine Valley. A lot of those. Bree Stevens Field in Madison gets mentioned. A lot of Summerfest. Mile of Music in Appleton. I know you're familiar with that.
I can't Rock believe Fest. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, Rockfest in Cadott. All outdoor music in Door County, according to Maxine here. Brenda says New Glarus has many great music venues. Let's see. I want to find there's a couple of other here. Fred puts down Ashley for the Arts in Arcadia. So there's two things about this. Oh, look at this one. Potter Shed and Shell Lake. Thanks for noticing, Don. High Noon Saloon. Two things about this. One, the sheer number of different options. You would learn so much just from this one post. But the other noteworthy thing about this, and I don't want to jinx it, but I scrolled through every response last night. So unless something's changed, out of these something like 200 responses or whatever it is, not one troll political, you know, jerk saying, oh, what kind of a, you know, libtard thing is that? Everybody just answered the question. It's a social media miracle.
Wow. I mean, the comments are sometimes...
The comments
are
usually toxic, yeah. You know, when you put something up. Even the most innocent thing, somebody will get in there and go, oh, well, it's Biden's fault or it's Trump's fault. It's like, no, just shut. No, leave. Some things don't need a political response, like your favorite outdoor music venue. And so far on this one, and I swear to God, if one of you listening out there says, oh, I'm going to be funny and troll this now, I'm going to call you out publicly. Don't do it. Put down your favorite outdoor music venue. So congratulations, everybody. That one really worked out well. Now, unfortunately, for outdoor music venues, we have some bad news to report. Remember the other day, Aaron and I talked about maybe wanting to go see Jimmy Buffett when he comes to Summerfest, but I guess he's not coming to Summerfest now. Yeah, and it's not the smoke in the haze thing like it was for Concerts on the Square. Recall on Tuesday, Christina Laurie and I talked about Concerts on the Square was supposed to start this week, but they actually postponed tonight's event till at least Thursday because of the poor air quality. So that part is really unfortunate. But apparently Jimmy Buffett has had to cancel his planned appearance for Summerfest. No reason given. Summerfest said it was simply for reasons out of our control. So what I'm going to say next is I'm going to grant you is speculative, but I am going to note that last month, Jimmy Buffett had to postpone a show in Charleston. And the note that he posted about it was rather personal and rather health related. He said, and again, this is last month. Hello, my faithful fans in Charleston and beyond. Here's a few words about Mark Twain about life changing. Challenges, Mark Twain said, make life interesting. However, overcoming them is what makes life meaningful. I had a sudden change of plans this week and wound up back in the hospital to address some issues that needed immediate attention. Growing old is for sissies, I promise you. I also will promise you that when I am well enough to perform, that is what I will be doing. Y'all make my life more meaningful and fulfilled, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, he ends it with not yet, which anybody who knows his song, One Particular Harbor, he really stresses that in the line about growing old and fading away. So we don't know exactly why Jimmy Buffett postponed the Summerfest show, but if it is for health reasons, obviously we wish him all the best and hope that he makes a full recovery there, because even at his tender age of, I want to say 75, I think, still puts on a very nice show. So that would be a nice development. Let's see. What have we got for comments here? Oh, Roger. We haven't heard from Roger for a while. Puts on Facebook. And so we'll show it up on the screen here. This weekend, Friday night through Sunday night, is Riverfront Rendezvous in Stevens Point. Great. Thank you, Roger, for mentioning that. Appreciate it. And if anybody else wants to add something to the comment section on the Up North News Facebook page, where you can see this live, feel free to do so. And if we see something there that we like, we will put that up. There is video of an American tourist. I can't even believe I'm saying this, Aaron. There's video of an American tourist carving his name and or his girlfriend's name in the Colosseum in Rome.
In the Colosseum.
Into the Colosseum wall. And there are people, you know, calling him names that we can't say on the radio. And he just gives this goofy smile to the camera. It's like, look how cool I am, you know, carving into the Colosseum. So apparently there, I don't know if there's a manhunt. I don't know if they found him. I know there was a manhunt to actually find this doofus. The message said his name must be Ivan. Ivan plus Haley, 23. And this comes at a time when people in Rome are already complaining about hordes of tourists flooding the Eternal City in record numbers this season. So I hope they find this guy.
I know if I was Haley, I'd be like, I want this individual potentially being the father to my children? I don't think so.
No, you really don't. I hope they find him. I hope they throw the book at him. All right, now to just a quick bit of serious news here about the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Again, it's not the world's biggest story yet, but there were concerns that the Wisconsin Elections Commission would be plunged into uncertainty if Megan Wolf, the current administrator, whose term expires on June 30th, what if she were to be, you know, not endorsed by the Wisconsin Elections Commission and reappointed. Well, as you know, because of the whole thing with Fred Prehn, the guy that overstayed his welcome on the DNR board, and conservatives on the state Supreme Court said, oh, well, if your term expires and there's no replacement, well, there can't be a replacement on the Wisconsin Elections Commission if there's no vacancy. And so the three Democrats on the Wisconsin Elections Commission said, there's no vacancy. We don't have to reappoint Megan Wolf. We're just leaving her in place. The Republicans wanted to have a vote on it to give the Republican state Senate a reason to maybe appoint somebody else. The Democrats simply abstained and the motion died. Here's how it was described by two of the members. You're going to hear from Ann Jacobs and Mark Thompson.
I agree with Commissioner Thompson that we don't have jurisdiction in this case. There is no vacancy. The law specifically says if a vacancy occurs. I don't think we can ignore that language. I don't think it's incumbent on us to try to make it into something it is not. I'm abstaining because we don't have jurisdiction to do this.
I don't think we should even play this game. Okay, when the law says we don't have a vacancy and we don't have the power to do it. There has to be a vacancy before we can ask for it. because right now she is the administrator, and I've heard virtually unanimous, consent that Megan Wolf is and should remain at the helm.
Because she's doing the best job. She's being completely nonpartisan, completely fact-based about it. And so while there are Republicans in the Senate who I'm sure are going to try some kind of end run around this, fact of the matter is now she can stay in that office past the expiration of her term, and there's not a damn thing they should be able to do about it. All right, Melissa Baldoth and Seth Hoffmeister next with our weekly climate check here up north. It's electric. Now on this Wednesday morning, it's time for our climate check segment we do with Melissa Baldoff every week. And there are most decidedly things to talk about that are climate related. Don't believe me? Look out your window where, it's been a hazy summer so far. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning. I'm coming to you from a push alert on my phone told me is the second worst place in the world for air quality right now, Milwaukee, which is just awful.
In the world.
Yeah. In the world. Yep. It is really bad out. I had to wear an N95 mask to go walk the dog. So it's pretty bad out.
And frankly, that's, again, not everybody had N95s because of the pandemic, but it sure is something that's pretty necessary right now with air quality this bad. And it's going to hang around in one degree or another for a while. And no doubt we've got some climate related things to talk about that, along with the potential for, a drought as well. And that's where we're going to put a lot of our focus on drought and on climate. And you've brought along a friend of ours from Wisconsin Conservation Voters.
Yes. Yes, we did. So we're very happy to have Seth Hoffmeister joining us this morning to talk a little bit, about, as much as, we're seeing those tangible, really negative impacts happening, the air quality. We're going to talk about the drought conditions that are so bad for our farmers and so many others. But there are some good things happening when it comes to the climate. And one of the good things that's happening is happening in Green Bay. And I would love if Seth could talk to us a little bit about some of the good things happening.
That sounds great. Seth, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Melissa. And thanks for having me on the show this morning.
You bet. So tell us more about what is being planned in Green Bay in terms of energy and getting to as close as possible to 100% clean energy. What does that mean? And how are you helping folks there get to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here in Green Bay, just like many parts of Wisconsin, I'm looking out my window right now, and I can barely see, the buildings a quarter mile away that are usually quite visible. I mean, we're already seeing the impacts of climate change, and we have for many years. But, several years ago, community activists, local elected officials in Green Bay, witnessing the extreme weather, the flooding on the East River and on the Bay and on the Fox, decided that and realized that we didn't have to wait around for the state government or for the federal government to act on climate, and that we could set goals and start planning. A few years of doing this work, and Green Bay has a full-time climate resilience coordinator working on flood resilience and clean energy planning. We were granted, in partnership, the city, in partnership with the city transit and the city water utility, we're given money from the state of Wisconsin to actually put those goals into action and map out how we can hit 100% clean energy by 2050 as a community. And on a day like today, it seems more and more relevant and pertinent that we get to work on this. And even though it's hard with the drought conditions and with, just the inability to breathe and the smell that I'm smelling through my closed apartment windows here of the wildfires coming in from Ontario, the work that's happening in places like Green Bay and other local places, and the support that we're getting from a federal government who now recognizes the existential threat of climate change and is putting action and resources behind that, makes me a little bit hopeful on an otherwise dreary day.
Mm-hmm. And Melissa, you've been up to Green Bay to talk about this as well. What things do you see them talking about and looking to put into action that give you reasons for optimism?
Yeah, I, you know, seeing a lot there. And I think, like Seth said, just knowing that, you know, there's that partnership between federal, state, and local resources is great for people to know and to see that the community is really engaged in the process. But what I've heard them talking about is, you know, taking efforts to make energy costs more affordable for homeowners and for businesses. So giving some assistance to people to make those energy costs a little bit easier to bear, you know, so that could be helping people invest in solar, assistance with energy bills. Also, I've heard, you know, conversations about electrifying fleet vehicles. You know, that's going to be something that is, you know, down the road could really be a cost savings. And we know it's going to be putting fewer, you know, harmful emissions into the environment. Decarbonizing buildings, same thing. So, you know, I've heard a lot of really great ideas, and I know they're still working on the plan and still gathering input from the community. But just knowing that there's such a thoughtful approach from the mayor, from the partners in the community, you know, and also getting that support from the state and, you know, from Governor Evers has really made it a point to help local communities take these steps in addition to taking action at the state level. So, you know, it's just nice to know that, you know, that this is in progress in Green Bay and other communities around the state too.
You know, Seth, when you mentioned that, you know, that this has been something that's been discussed for the past, you know, 3 years or so, it reminds me, if you'll forgive the little tangent here, but when we were looking to start up North News about 3.5 to 4 years ago, I actually used those early discussions in Green Bay in a whole lot of meetings to tell people what was going to be different about Up North News is that while you can cover the day to day, you know, in the legislature and in politics and, you know, Summerfest is open and that's all nice, but what's the thing that's going to matter long term? And I pointed to those Green Bay discussions and said, we need to let more people know that there are leaders out there who are leading on things like climate and energy, making buildings more efficient, getting more city buses and school bus fleets, you know, to be electric powered. And so I'm glad that you're here to right now really give us that update on how these things are happening. And I'm sure that was made a lot easier by the Inflation Reduction Act by the Biden administration. I'm sure there's just innumerable elements that you're looking at and saying, finally, after all these years, this and this are going to help people in Green Bay and the rest of Wisconsin.
I love to hear that. And I'm so glad that our work in this neck of the woods helped tell that story and get Up North News going. You know, we've taken a lot of inspiration from other communities as well, places like Eau Claire, and I know a lot of other local communities around the state saw what Green Bay was doing, and we're like, we can do it here too. We have a community organizer with Wisconsin Conservation Voters in Stevens Point, where I went to college at UWSP, Go Pointers, and they're starting to have some of those same conversations too. So it really is contagious. There's a snowball effect of local communities taking climate action. There are dozens of places that are doing all of that. And yeah, it's exactly like you said. You can come up with these plans and these goals, but without the resources and the you know, the backing of our federal government, we're limited in what we can do. And I think going into the end of this year, when the IRA and Biden Affordable Clean Energy Plan benefits start to hit states and start to hit local governments, we're going to really just see a new era of climate action in the United States. And I think some of the things that we're seeing out our windows today, some of the drought conditions, the extreme weather, the smoke, are hopefully going to help with the urgency to have this not be the one thing that we do and really just the first biggest historic investment in climate change. I hope every 2 years we have a federal government investing even more in climate solutions, because the benefits to our health, the benefits to you know, our daily lives, the benefits to our economy are going to be innumerable if we continue to make this a priority.
Let's move outside the city limits then and talk about, you know, the rural parts of Northeast Wisconsin and the rest of the state, because we know that, for example, the Inflation Reduction Act includes $20 billion to support climate smart agriculture practices, another $5 billion for forest health. Melissa, these and many other things are going to have a direct impact, not just for the climate, but a direct impact on the rural economies that farmers and others in rural areas will see real tangible benefits for doing things that stop contributing to the changing climate.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, this is something that, you know, is going to be coming up again very soon. So we've got this $20 billion allocated through the Inflation Reduction Act, but, you know, that funding could be at risk in the next farm bill. So it's so important that we've got folks out there who are talking about this and advocating for, you know, keeping this investment and, in, to Seth's point, expanding on these investments year over year over year. You know, farmers are wanting to see these types of conservation programs, particularly the next generation of farmers who are very concerned about the climate crisis. And that is something that I know is very, you know, really hits close to home for so many folks in Wisconsin. You know, they've got family farms that have been around for generations, and they want to make sure that their kids and their grandkids can continue to, you know, farm on their lands. And those young folks, 80% of them say that they want to see engagement in conservation efforts, and they want to see expansion in that, and that is important to them. And that is, you know, even higher among farmers of color who have been, you know, impacted in even larger ways here. So, you know, I think that's a really important piece of the conversation, is that these resources are important, and they are also something that we're hearing over and over again, farmers want to see, and it will help them be able to, we can continue to rely on them for a safe and healthy food supply, and they can continue to earn a living.
Melissa, you raise a very important point that Congress is talking about a farm bill, happens every 4 years or so, has to pass, that so many programs are in critical need and funded by the farm bill. But that'll be more difficult with split control of Congress. And it's not just about, you know, spending and doing things. There's been a lot of Republican talk about, especially during the debt ceiling debate, about clawing back, you know, pandemic aid that hasn't been spent yet. And so the farm bill could actually be a battleground for rolling back some of the parts of the Inflation Reduction Act rather than making those investments in rural economies.
It's just so important to keep this funding in there. You know, we've got so many people who are experiencing these bad conditions, right? You've got farm workers bearing the brunt of working in extreme heat, unpredictable storms, these drought conditions. And, you know, we've got to really keep the feet to the fire for our members of Congress to hold on to these investments. You know, this is funding for regional conservation partnership programs, for a conservation stewardship program, to support agricultural conservation, technical assistance programs. You know, these are efforts that can provide really direct support to farmers, to rural communities, to our producers and folks working in the agriculture industry. You know, so we want to make sure that we're protecting those resources for them to continue to do the work, because, you know, as we said, they're really bearing the brunt of these bad conditions, you know, personally and physically working in these bad conditions, and with, you know, their livelihoods of, you know, farmers directly and the rural economy as a whole, who depends on our farmers being successful.
And just at a household level, whether you're in the city or the country, the rebates that are out there for, you know, heat pumps, for, you know, switching out appliances, these are all things, Seth, at the individual level that need to be, you know, preserved at, you know, at the federal level, and frankly could use more state investment as well. I have to imagine that when you're talking about things like rebates, that generates even more enthusiasm from people who they may not be, you know, as deeply concerned about climate environmental issues, but, you know, the rebates help motivate them.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's just a, you know, a kitchen table pocketbook issue that's going to resonate with so many folks across the state and across the country. We're really just now starting to dig into all of the benefits that consumers are going to be able to have, you know, heat pumps, solar panels, just so many different benefits that we're just starting to scratch the surface on. And we're really excited to tell that story too, and to let folks know how they can save money on their energy costs. I know in the last couple of years, looking at my WPS bill, the rising price of gas and electricity has been putting a little strain on the old pocketbook, and anything that you know, we can do to keep those costs down and also make our air cleaner to breathe and support a growing sector of new jobs in our new 21st century economy is really a win.
There's a lot of wins to be had, but sometimes they still have to be defended. So Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters and Melissa Baldoff, thank you for shining a light on these issues related to rural Wisconsin, to Green Bay, to a climate that has to deal with drought and wildfires. There's a lot to work on, and I really appreciate your time and expertise on this.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Today's history lesson and music break with Melissa Kay is next. You're up north.
Up on the roof, up on the roof.
Could be the Drifters.
When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face.
Melissa Kay is here from locally grown radio, WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Good, good. So we're hearing the Drifters. They had the number one song with Up on the Roof. Want to guess the year?
63.
Very close, 62. Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, there we go. The number one song that year. Before we get to the other history stuff, speaking of the Drifters, you know, of course, they did Bless You, Aaron, over there sneezing and silently on video.
Thank you.
So you've heard of ChatGPT, this AI thing that everybody's talking about now.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if I mentioned it on the radio yet. If I did, I apologize, but I thought that might be a good thing to use for the This Day in History segment. Instead of having to go through all these other websites, just have one site say, show me all of the celebrity birthdays and the number one songs for this date.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried it two different times now.
Yeah.
Came back completely wrong. Almost everything there. Was wrong. Had the wrong birthday, the wrong anniversary, whatever. So I'm like, okay, I'm going through all these by hand. The Drifters made me think of it because I remember seeing someplace that the Drifters Under the Boardwalk was like the song that was popular on my birthday, which would be July 3rd, 1964. Ooh. But that was wrong. Or ChatGPT is wrong because I just asked it. And it said it hit number one in August of 1964. Mm. So I don't know what to make of all this AI. I think there's no substitute for doing your own homework.
Yeah, ChatGPT for the fail.
There's no substitute for doing your own homework yet.
Yet. On this day in 1926, Mercedes-Benz was formed by Gottlieb Daimler and Carl Benz. On this day in 1969, this is what started Pride Month, the Stonewall Riots began in New York City, marking the start of the gay rights movement. This is the anniversary of the birth of American playwright and composer Richard Rodgers of Rodgers and Hammerstein. He passed away in 1979, but here's one example from Oklahoma.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
So here's the deal. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the clip from Oklahoma, and I'm blanking out on the name of the actor, Gordon McRae, I think, is and he's on this horse going across this beautiful field, singing this lovely song about what a lovely day. And I thought, how far have we fallen from that time to Yellowstone, where Kevin Costner and all these other people are like branding and torturing the bad guys, and it's so violent. And I'm just like, could we somehow get back to Gordon McRae on a horse in a cornfield?
Can we just pretend there's no violence?
Well,
it's not a thing.
I just don't want it on my TV. You know, I want to relax.
Let's live in an iconic fantasy world.
Mel Brooks. Do you know how old he turns today? Today is his birthday.
Ooh.
97.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say he's got to be in his 90s.
Yeah, born this day in 1926. This is the birthday for Elon Musk. He would be 52 years old today, unless he's already managed to screw up his birthday the way he screwed up Twitter. Rob Dyrdek, you know him from Ridiculousness or from his time as a skateboarding champion. He would be 49 years old today. On this day in 1975, the number one song was by David Bowie. in one of those things you learn when you're doing the research, the backing vocals on this, John Lennon. Did not know that. On this day in 1997, I don't know if you remember this one, Melissa, the Holyfield-Tyson second fight, where Mike Tyson was disqualified in the third round for biting off a piece of Evander Holyfield's ear.
Really? Ew.
Oh, you've never seen that?
No. Nor do I want to.
So disgusting.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It is. I mean, now Mike Tyson, when he first came up, you know, through the ranks, he was like, nobody could believe this guy. It was like all these first round knockouts. But at some point you had to say, he must really have some anger issues. And we later learned he has serious anger issues.
Yeah.
On this day in 2012, the Flaming Lips break the Guinness World Record for the most live shows performed in multiple cities within 24 hours. They did 8 different live concerts in 24 hours, whoa, stretching from Memphis to New Orleans. The previous record was 7 shows in 24 hours by Jay-Z. And this is, I'm not familiar with the Flaming Lips. This is called It's Summertime, Aaron?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I can't, oh, good on them. But let's not forget to give credit to the roadies, because you can't do any live shows of any scale,
nope,
without, oh, a crew, yeah, like this.
Absolutely. Okay. I know I've done a lot of like stage tech work mm-hmm, in local theater, and some of it for music when we had bands come into town, and it's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So definitely give it up for the roadies on this one.
Oh, for sure.
One more note here: on this day 4 years ago, singer, actress, American Idol runner-up Catherine McPhee, who at the time was 35, got married to super producer David Foster, who was then 69. They had met 13 years earlier when Foster mentored McPhee on American Idol. They started dating in 2017, and they now have a son who's 2 years old, and they appear to be very happy, Catherine McPhee and David Foster, who are now 40 and 73. So, you know, good on them.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Glad it worked out.
Yes, it seems to have worked out just fine. Before I ask Melissa about locally grown radio, I can't forget to note that we just learned that we have acquired 4 tickets for the Brewers game next Monday. It's July, Monday, July 3rd, and it's against the Chicago Cubs. The, ooh, Cubs will be in town starting Monday the 3rd. And rather than do 2 and 2, I'm going to give away all 4 at once, and I'm going to do it on Friday. So, folks be listening Friday, because I'm taking Monday off for my birthday. I'm not going, not going to the game. Kind of wish I was now, but we're going to give away 4 tickets on Friday. So Melissa, awesome, what's new in Rapids world?
Oh, you know, today we get to talk with Allison Dairyland, Taylor Schaefer, during our 9 o'clock hour on the morning show on WFHR. So we're excited about that.
And where's she from? Do you know?
Actually, I think she's from Wisconsin Rapids.
I kind of thought she must be like a local girl there, because
yeah,
I believe the previous one must have been from somewhere in the Chippewa Valley, because I know I've seen her mentioned a couple of times over the course of the past year.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to this Allison Dairyland story. You can imagine our shock one day when our morning news anchor, Roxanne Westfall, wasn't on the morning show that day, and up comes a story in the morning show that she was the new Allison Dairyland. She had applied and did everything for the job and won the job over the weekend, all without telling anybody at the TV station, because if she won, she wanted it to be a surprise. And it was a surprise. And Roxy made a great Allison Dairyland. But can you imagine that shock of finding out your coworker is, yeah, suddenly Allison Dairyland?
Poof. That's pretty awesome.
Well, it can only happen to so many coworkers. It could happen to you. Now, if one of these mornings Aaron's not here and he's Allison Dairyland, then I'm going to be really surprised, but you know.
So will I.
And Aaron more than anybody else, we submitted his name. Hey Melissa, good to talk to you. Have a great show this morning.
You too. Thanks guys.
Over on locally grown radio WFHR, more on Up North News Radio coming up in just a bit after a news break here up north.